I took great pride as I got to know Kobe Bryant, that he was just trying to be a better person, a better basketball player. We talked about business. We talked about family. We talked about everything. And he was just trying to be a better person. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Feeling fine.
I'm glad, man. Sounds great. Banger in the paint, Rajon Walia, how you feeling?
A bit heavy-hearted after Kobe's memorial service, but overall good spirits.
That was really emotional, eh? Did you watch all 3 hours?
Yeah, I pretty much sat back and watched the 3 hours, mostly paying attention to the speakers that I wanted to hear. Vanessa, Jordan, Shaq, and I also thought Ionescu, that NCAA women's player, also had a great speech.
Did you like Diana Taurasi taking shots at LeBron?
Yeah, that was pretty cool, and it was nice to see like different people who were involved in Gigi's life and also Kobe's life talk.
Yeah, they made it much more inclusive. It was good. I think it was really well done overall. All right, so we're past the All-Star break. You know, I think at this point we have a pretty good idea of what most teams are generally, right? But at the same time, it's also like the end of February. A lot of guys are going to be breaking down at this point, and we have a couple of major injuries to discuss. You got Kyrie Irving finally taking his shoulder surgery like we talked about last week. Jeremy Lamb tore his meniscus and ACL during a game against the Raptors this past weekend. And probably the biggest news of it all, Ben Simmons is now out indefinitely with back pain. Josh, man, I know you've been saying that the Sixers are going to make it out of the East this year, but I don't know about this. With Simmons injured, that could really put a dampen on everything.
This definitely gives me pause for sure. And they need, you know, home court advantage at least in the first round, I think, in order to advance and then, you know, gain some confidence, obviously. And depending on how long he's out, they're going to be in trouble because they don't have a lot of depth behind them since they've signed Horford and Tobias Harris to those massive contracts in the offseason. And Horford hasn't really, you know, fit in too much. Especially lately. He's starting again as of, you know, last night. And, you know, they barely beat an Atlanta team at home where Joel Embiid had to score 49 points for them to win. So Philadelphia might be in some trouble right now. But then again, Miami just lost to Cleveland. So, you know, I think the 4-5 matchup is very fluid right now.
Cleveland.
How about them Cavs?
Yeah, those damn Cavs. They're a tough team to beat.
Wow.
Playing Larry Nance at small forward.
Wow. That's incredible.
They played a big lineup yesterday. I watched the overtime, and Andre Drummond wasn't even playing. So they had Larry Nance at small forward, Kevin Love at power forward, and Tristan Thompson at center. And it's actually working somewhat. It was weird to watch. It's like old school 80s ball.
I really want Andre Drummond to be out there with Tristan Thompson one day.
I think they tried that in one game, and it didn't really work out so well.
I wonder why. Raj, who do you think is... I don't know. I'm trying to look at this with like a silver lining here. Who's the biggest beneficiary of the Simmons injury?
Well, I think the obvious person is Joel Embiid, just because out of those two big superstars, he was the one that was underperforming, or he was very inconsistent. And now that Simmons is out, I think he's expected to take on that alpha dog mentality of the team. And I think in a way, this could be good for his game. I definitely think the Sixers need Simmons if they plan on making any serious playoff run. But maybe this gets Embiid going. Maybe this gives Tobias Harris a few more touches. and instills a bit more confidence into those two players. And also, I think another player that I think hasn't been talked about enough, and I think he's been in and out of the lineup the entire season, is Josh Richardson. He's like the big shooting component for the Sixers, and they need him to play at least like as well as he can play in terms of average gameplay, if not playing out of his mind in the playoffs for them to really make it to the finals.
I mean, he's been in and out of injuries all year, right? So that's why haven't really seen him on the floor consistently. But whenever he's around, he's a pretty good contributor to the team. I don't know about taking on primary ball handling duties, because that's a major position to fill. But as a secondary ball handler, he's been really good for this team. I don't know if I want him handling the rock full time, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when they're healthy, too, having him out there instead of on the bench, it gives them five guys who can defend multiple positions instead of having to play a guy like, Furkan Korkmaz or Raul Neto at that position. Or, Shake Milton has stepped up as well, and he's actually been pretty good for them in the last few weeks with all the injuries, but he's not a guy you can rely on come playoff time. So Richardson's going to be a big piece for them, obviously. And when he's in the lineup, like you said, he does provide a lot of shooting and, ball handling capabilities. And that's all thanks to him playing point guard for the Heat for a year and a half. So, their development process in Miami is obviously really good, and it shows with what Richardson has become.
I think the main thing about the 76ers team, though, is they want their team to be healthy. I don't think it looks like the top three in the East are pretty much set in stone in terms of who's going to be there. It's going to be Boston, Toronto, and Milwaukee. The 4-5 that's where Philly could possibly make up ground. But if you gave Philly the option of pushing for that 4 seed and risking further damage to Simmons, or just resting him, playing him sparingly, easing him back in so that he's good to go in the playoffs, I think they're going to choose the latter option. So right now, Philly still has a lot of the tools to be a dangerous team in the East, and they should prioritize getting healthy instead of pushing for a higher seed, because they're not going to get much higher than 4th.
And Philly has a slightly easier strength of schedule than Miami does, so you would think that they're probably going to be the 4 seed, especially, with these random injuries that Miami keeps happening to. I mean, Jimmy Butler's been out the last couple games for personal reasons, I think. And, Tyler Hero's been out for a while, which is something that not a lot of people have been talking about. And, their lineup has been, extremely fluid throughout the year. They have a lot of guys that have stepped up in certain aspects and certain points of the year, but they also haven't really had a consistent lineup the second part of the year anyway.
But inversely, though, wouldn't you want to run like a Simmons Embiid combination as much as you can right now just to get these reps in? Like, you don't want to go into the playoffs and have to try to figure out like how Embiid and Simmons are going to play together with Horford coming off the bench. I think this is the time of the year where you want as close to a playoff lineup as you can get out there, just so these guys know their chemistry, they know what roles they got to do, what kind of game to play, essentially, together.
I don't think it's more so Simmons and Embiid. It's more so just trying to figure out where Horford fits in all this and what lineups he's going to play with when he comes off the bench when Simmons is back, right? Is he going to play more with Simmons or more with Embiid? How many minutes per game does he play? Is it going to be 20 to 24? Is it going to be 30? And the other thing that we haven't really talked about yet is, because, Simmons is going to be out indefinitely, this is going to put a lot of pressure on Embiid, and we know that he's had a, crazy injury past, and if he's having to score, 30-plus points a night or 49 like yesterday, is he going to be healthy come playoff time, or is he just going to tire himself out? Because last playoffs, he was a disaster in terms of, basically being questionable every single game. With different respiratory illnesses and ankle injuries and knee injuries, so hopefully Simmons comes back sooner rather than later. Because if not, Embiid's going to have a lot of responsibility in his shoulders.
You still think Philly's the favorite to come out of the East?
They're definitely not the favorite, but just in terms of looking at them from a roster building perspective, I still like them come playoff time.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Your favorite to come out of the East.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's really counting them in right now, especially with his injury, but I think if Simmons comes back at least, with a month left, and he's able to get back to where he was, like, he's a all-defense type of player now. And offensively, he's actually going to the basket and not really worrying as much about getting fouled, because he's shooting a better percentage, especially the last month or so. So he's looked like a different player the last month plus, and it's just too bad that this happened.
Yeah, it's such a shame. All right, I want to move on to the next one. Let's talk about Kyrie Irving. I mean, we talked about it last week, so I don't think we need to really pound it in, but he's finally opted to get his shoulder surgery. Looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the year. And now the Brooklyn Nets can go back to what they did last year and just play team ball, like what made them successful last year.
I think this is the right decision for Kyrie. Everyone talks about next year being Brooklyn's real year, and I think it's pretty obvious to say when you have Kevin Durant, one of the five best NBA players right now, coming back to your team, they're going to be a real threat next year, and there's no point of him forcing playing through the injury or delaying the surgery even further, because that might prolong his absence into next year. But I think the bigger story coming out of this is Kyrie now has a very, very questionable injury history. He's had it before and people have talked about his durability, but there's five point guards now, especially with the young point guards that are coming into the game, that I think have surpassed Kyrie, not in terms of skill or single game performance. I think Kyrie's still up there, but what I expect them to do in the next 5 or 10 years, I think there's five point guards right now that I would put ahead of Kyrie if I was starting a team. And a couple of years ago, you would never say that because Kyrie was promising, one of the best handles in the game, an elite scorer. But now questions about his injury past, his leadership, his ability to get the best out of his teammates, knowing exactly where his head's at, have really come into question. And I fear that we'll always be talking about what if Kyrie was healthy, what if he didn't have the surgeries or the injuries or the time off, because it's slowly trending in that direction with his career. So hopefully he recovers, hopefully he plays injury free for the next couple of years and proves me wrong.
I think that this is a blessing in disguise for a team that's going through a transition year, because now he can rest for the next, what if it's 7 or 8 months? And then he can come back and he's going to have at least one solid backup. Like, I think they still have to figure out what they're going to do with their roster, because I don't think they can keep both LeVert and Dinwiddie based on the roster construction when Kevin Durant gets back. But I think they'll keep one of those guys, and hopefully next year they'll load manage him better to where he's only playing, you know, 28 to 30 minutes a game and not as hard of minutes, you know, based on him not being the number one guy out there and having a lot of help around him. So when, you know, there's games where Dinwiddie's going off or LeVert, depending on who they keep, you can keep Kyrie on the bench for longer and then maybe play him 25 minutes in a lot of these games and then load manage him on back-to-backs. Like, he's a candidate for sure to be on the Kawhi, you know, type of scenario where he's only playing 60-65 games a year, but he's not having all these nagging injuries that become bigger injuries later on.
Wouldn't you kind of say that Kyrie also, just the style he plays, like even if he is playing those 27-28 minutes, he's not making it easy on himself. Like, I feel sometimes he does a bit too much. He treats every game like it's like the finals, or like he's trying to prove a point every game. And sometimes it's a little frustrating because he has this injury history and he has to know that he has to preserve his body. It kind of seems like he lacks that maturity of knowing when to go and when to push his body and when to realize that, hey, this is a regular season game against Orlando. Like, I'm going to try to score. We're going to try to win, but think bigger picture, think playoffs, think finals.
I don't know. I mean, he's a great shooter, so maybe on that point, he should focus more on taking more three-point shots and more outside shots instead of getting to the basket as much and having those insane Kyrie finishes he's known for. Maybe this is a time where he has to transition his career into being more of a, you know, a shooter type, where he comes off screens and, you know, pulls up instead of trying to get to the basket and do all these creative finishes and landing hard on the floor all the time. Maybe this is the time where he finally realizes, you know, I need to be smarter about this.
Hold on. Kyrie is only 27. By the time he comes back, he's going to be 28. Most guys don't come to that point of maturity until they're, you know, in their early 30s. You know what I mean? Like, you're telling one of the top-tier point guards to turn essentially into a pick-and-pop player? A guy who's, we've said, has, like, one of the best handles in league history, one of the best finishers, one of the best fourth-quarter scorers, and we want him to be a pick-and-pop guy?
I'm not saying that, just more so, you know, you see what Chris Paul has done since he had his knee injury. He's more of like a guy that gets in the mid-range and takes those pull-up shots instead of getting all the way to the basket. And he's not shooting nearly as many free throws as he did, like, you know, 7, 8 years ago, even 10, 12 years ago when he was super athletic. So I think just limiting the amount of times that he's landing on him, on his ass, that's what he has to be looking at, I think.
Yeah, I think also, like, he's been in the league, what, 9 years, 8, 9 years now. The game has taken a toll on his body, and it's not that he's going to become a pick-and-pop shooter. Like, he can still get to the rim, but he's not built like Russell Westbrook. Like, he's not built to take that much contact day in, day out for 82 games a season. And to Josh's point, I do think he will be load-managed. But I think a lot of it's also in Kyrie's mindset. Like, I think this year, the games he did play, I think he ended up playing like 20 games total. It seemed like he didn't get his teammates involved enough, and it was just like a lack of trust or lack of communication, or they just maybe hadn't had enough practice. Like, we can go on forever, but it just seems like he doesn't make it easier for himself when maybe he should start thinking of, you know what, we just need to make the playoffs. We just need to be a top four seed. I don't need to put up crazy stats every night. And then let's do some damage in the playoffs.
And I think that things will get easier next year because they'll have, you know, obviously Kevin Durant back, and then the team around them is actually really good. So I think the parts are going to fit pretty well next year. And, you know, on the note that he's going to the basket a lot more, I mean, he's shooting 5 free throws a game this year versus 3.7 last year. It's his highest free throw rate of his career this year by a little bit. His second year, he's at 4.9 free throw attempts a game. So yeah, I think he just has to change his game just a little bit just to, you know, avoid all those hard falls and situations where he's like getting in the lane and making quick movements and just putting a lot of wear and tear on his body. It's really hard for a player to do that, obviously, but at a certain point when you've gone through, I think, 4 surgeries now throughout his career and a couple of major ones, he really has to look at changing at least part of his game.
Ooh, it's been 4?
I believe so, yeah.
Is that including like his hand surgery or his, you know what I mean, like in his earlier years?
I think from what I heard, it was 4 major surgeries. I'm not sure if that was a major one, if you count that as a major one, but I have to look back.
That's crazy for such a young guy.
Well, he's had, this is going to be his shoulder. He's had his knee, I believe, twice.
Yeah.
So that's 3 major, and I can't think of the 4th off the top of my head.
That's rough. All right, well, hopefully he gets a speedy recovery because I'd love to see him and KD together next year on the floor, both healthy. Moving on, let's talk about this guy quick. Jeremy Lamb, the Raptor killer from last year, has torn his meniscus and ACL all in the same play, basically. Do the Pacers have any chance in the playoffs now? I mean, their depth is obviously weak. Well, weaker, I guess. Oladipo is still getting his stride in, but, I mean, Oladipo has looked really shaky this year coming back from his injuries, too. So, I wouldn't really put them as a major threat to, I guess, at this point, the 3 seed in Boston when they match up in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Pacers expected a bit more of a boost with Oladipo, and he's played, what, I think 9 games now since his return, sitting out a lot of back-to-backs and just resting to make sure that he's not playing himself into another injury. But they didn't get the spark that Oladipo was expected to provide, and I think the Pacers still have a chance to cause some problems in the playoffs, but I don't see them winning a series unless Oladipo gets back to his old form before the injury.
Yeah, and I think after the season's over, they have a lot of soul-searching to do in terms of who they're going to keep at the big man position. I don't think they can keep both of those guys, and I think they have to improve their overall roster by trading one of those guys for another starter and maybe a bench piece, and they have to decide which guy they're going to keep.
I think it's pretty obvious that based off of just his performance this year, that Sabonis is the piece that they should keep. I think Miles Turner had a lot more promise 3 years ago, and I don't think his game has developed or his fit in the team hasn't developed the same way as Sabonis has. But it'll be interesting what they do. I think the good thing with Indiana is they have a few good pieces around with Brogdon and Sabonis, and they're getting a lot of good production out of TJ Warren. And so they have a few good pieces, and I think this year is not going to be this year, but I still think they're going to push some team in the playoff because their style of basketball with like more focused on defense, slowing the game down, will be effective in the playoffs. And
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that as well. I mean, they've only played Boston once so far this year, and they actually beat Boston at home, and they have two more games against them going forward, and it's looking like Boston is going to be a 3 seed. You know, they're 2.5 games back at Toronto right now, and I think they have 1 game left against Toronto. But yeah, I mean, it's looking like that's going to be the matchup in the playoffs, and I think that it's a tougher decision than a lot of people think when it comes to Miles Turner versus Sabonis. Because Indiana's always had the identity of a defensive team, and Miles Turner is a much better defensive player than Sabonis, even though Sabonis has gotten better, and Sabonis is obviously a much better all-around player, but this is also Sabonis's, you know, he's at his peak value right now, so you have to look at that and figure you're not going to get as much back for Turner either. So maybe you look at it from that aspect, and then you decide to go more so defense because you already have a really good backcourt, and then you have TJ Warren who can score on the wing as well. So maybe the thought is to get a really good starting power forward for Sabonis.
Damn, what a tough decision.
It's a good decision, though. I mean, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, could be worse. It could be the Cavs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look at Indiana's. I just want to point this out, that they've had bad luck against Toronto. Like, Oladipo hurt himself against Toronto last year and Jeremy Lamb this year. And both innocent plays is just a bit of bad luck as well.
Yeah, it's a shame. Let's move on to something more, you know, something happier for a change. The Milwaukee Bucks, guys, are on pace for 70 wins this year. That's it. That's all they got. They're crushing their opponents. Other than, obviously, Monday night's game against Washington that went into overtime. Otherwise, you're looking at almost 20-point victories pretty consistently, which results in Giannis having to play, what, 27 to 30 minutes a game? All their stars are getting a lot of rest, which means that they'll be healthy for the playoffs. I mean, is there a way to actually stop this team come the playoff time?
I mean, they've created a style to where you have to hit at least 15 threes a game against them to even have a chance. Because they defend the paint like nobody else. Like, they allow the least amount of points in the paint, but I think they're still top three in terms of giving up three-point shots. Because they try to funnel everything into Brook and Giannis, and both of those guys have been, you know, top five defensive players at the rim in terms of, you know, what teams are shooting against them in the paint. So you have to have a game like, you know, Philly had against them earlier in the season where they hit, I think, 20 plus threes in order to beat them. And that's basically the only way to beat them. And it's tough to do that 4 times out of 7. Unless you have a team like Toronto from last year where you can beat them from a whole, like a bunch of different angles because you have 5 guys on the floor that can score in a bunch of different areas, and a lot of teams obviously don't have that. I mean, there's, you probably count on less than a handful of teams that can, you know, actually do that, to bring 5 guys on the floor that can play both offense and defense and rely on them to not be a weak point on either side of the ball. I mean, you might have, what, 2 or 3 teams like that?
At most.
Yeah. It's different this year.
You hit it right on, like, on the head right there. Like, the way they play their game, it's actually not different than last year. And last year they had obviously tremendous success, and the fact that they're doing it even better this year is more surprising, because usually in the offseason teams will have chances to game plan, maybe teams will find a way to beat your system or at least be stronger against your system, but that doesn't seem to be the case. And I would even argue that this Bucks team, although they're more impressive on paper and stats wise this year, I think they're worse than last year, just in terms of the actual players they have and the depth. Last year they were absolutely loaded, but I think one thing that we are maybe giving the Bucks a bit too much credit for is I think the way they play, and especially the way they get offense and score points, is a little easier in the regular season than it is in the playoffs. Like, they're very reliant on their defense and getting some transition baskets, getting Giannis to the rim, and I think that really slows down in the playoffs. And I can really see a team like Boston really pushing the Bucks in the playoffs, and I could see that being like a 7-game series, because Boston's been pretty impressive this year, and I think the Bucks are there to be taken if you're built the right way, which only a few teams are, like you mentioned, but Boston's one of them.
I mean, Boston is Eric Bledsoe's kryptonite.
So is Toronto.
Well, all the good teams are Eric Bledsoe's kryptonite. A lot of weaknesses on that guy in the playoffs. So what you would want to do is essentially have a bunch of perimeter players to hit threes against them while also being versatile enough to sort of switch off onto these guys on defense, right? And then you're essentially just going to let Giannis, what, go for 50 a game if he has to?
I don't think so. I think in the playoffs, you should be crowding Giannis and trying to make guys like Connaughton score 12 to 15 points a game. I think that's the way you have, like, sort of what Toronto did last year, and just crowding with four guys as getting into the paint, and then you have to, like, really be good in your rotations. Because last year in the playoffs, Giannis's passing was not that great. When he got into the lane, his reads were not as good, and he was throwing passes at people's ankles. And whereas this year, he has gotten better in terms of his passing, but it remains to be seen if he's going to be able to do that against the high-level teams in rounds 2 and 3. So I think ultimately you crowd him, and you give him different looks, obviously. But you can't guard him with one guy, obviously, and just let him go for 50. That's not going to be a winning strategy.
You don't think guys like Dante DiVincenzo will show up in the playoffs and hit threes for them?
The only guy I'm worried about on their team hitting threes, or I guess two guys, would be Middleton and George Hill. Everyone else is fair game. Leave them open.
Korver? The disrespect.
He's not going to play.
Wes Matthews?
You know, Wes Matthews is averaging like 5 points a game this year. I don't know what happened to him on offense. He's really good on defense, mind you, but offensively, his game is just like falling off a cliff.
Ever since he had that Achilles injury, he hasn't been the same. Like most players, in his defense. It's near impossible.
Yeah, but he was still scoring
back
at like 10 points a game plus, and he's taking a lot of shots, whereas with this team, he barely ever shoots.
He doesn't need to.
True.
It's just the threat of having someone hit the three.
Come playoff time, though, he's going to get a lot of open looks.
So do you think someone will, i.e. Philly, will stop this team? Raj, do you think that anyone actually has a chance? Like, do the Raptors have a chance of stopping this team like they did last year?
Yeah, I definitely think they have a chance. I don't think Milwaukee is unbeatable like the Clippers. I think the Clippers are more unbeatable in the West than the Bucks are in the East. The one thing that worries me about Philly is they really don't have that shooting. And like Josh mentioned, I think the only team that was really able to shoot lights out and beat Milwaukee kind of when they were asking them to beat them at the three-point line was Philly when they hit 21 three-pointers, but that's not going to happen every night. But I think the Raptors definitely have a chance. They have a lot of players that can switch. They play ferocious defense. They limit transition buckets. And I think the fact that they've done it once before gives them that confidence. But I think Boston's really the big threat to knock off the Bucks. I think Jason Tatum's taken big leaps, and I think we'll get to that later in the pod. And one clear example of why I think Milwaukee isn't as unbeatable is what kind of happened yesterday with Bradley Beal that we probably won't have a chance to talk about. So I'm just going to give my 1 minute spiel. He had two 50 point games back to back. Obviously it was against the Chicago Bulls away. And then last night they were hosting the Bucks, which has one of the best defenses in the league. And he was on fire. Like, he was hitting his shots, and Beal's definitely a capable player like that. I feel bad for him playing on Washington. I think he deserves a lot better. He's riding out a very tough period for that organization, and he had probably one of the top five storylines in the NBA just from a game perspective that will probably not be talked about for the rest of the season because he plays on Washington.
And just quickly, I think if Toronto strikes out on Embiid and Giannis coming up in the next couple of years, I think that Bradley Beal is ultimately going to be their next target because Toronto has all their draft picks. They have a bunch of good young players that they can possibly trade for him as well. So the Raptors are obviously in a great position overall and just in terms of their capability to be the next team in line to get the next superstar because of all the assets that they have. But in terms of teams that can beat Milwaukee, I think, like you said, Boston's a big one. And I think Toronto's the other one because you have two teams that are just so smart on defense to where they know where their rotations have to be and where they're going to be coming from if they're going to be sagging in on Giannis. And they have the types of players that can slow Milwaukee down on the perimeter to make those types of rotations to make, you know, to take players out like, you know, Mirotić last year where they were making him take really tough shots in the playoffs and then he basically became unplayable. I'm not sure Milwaukee has enough guys you can trust overall in the playoffs, but again, they've been so dominant this year, it's hard to say that they're not coming out of the East, but I still think that ultimately they're not going to be going to the finals.
As if you turned praising Bradley Beal into a Raptors praise session.
Always.
That's some nonsense, man.
The Raptors will be getting
one
of those three players, if not two of them, in the next two seasons.
Yeah, good luck with that.
We're a major market now, baby.
Yeah, that's what you say. That's what everyone in Toronto thinks. We'll see once they actually get a free agent.
Praise the Maasai.
And just a quick question for you guys. Do you think Bradley Beal is one of the most underrated player, or is the most underrated player in the NBA this year?
He plays no defense, which I don't blame him for.
It's also the Wizards system.
No, but he's really not trying. I mean, Zach LaVine gave him like 35 easy points too. He just doesn't play any defense, but I think ultimately when he's on a winning team, he'll try harder. And when he's asked to do less as well.
Yeah, he used to be one of the better defenders at the wing position. So it's not like he's not capable. He literally just doesn't care this year, which is fine.
Why I don't even think it's about caring. It's more so like he's carrying so much of the load. It's hard to have that much energy to play defense too and cover for your teammates when you're scoring 30-plus points a game.
Go get your buckets, man. He is definitely one of the most underrated players, though. About the most, I'm not sure about, but he's definitely up there. Who else could there be?
Booker Terrence until... Davis.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that's over.
The most underrated player in the NBA this season is Serge Ibaka. Nobody talks about him, but he's having one of the best years of any center in the NBA this season.
No, we're not doing this, sorry.
It's the truth.
We're not going down that path. He's good. We'll give him that, and we'll move on from that.
Yeah, we're not doing this. Jason Tatum, guys, ever since the All-Star break, has been on an absolute tear. This Boston Celtics team is 8-2 in their last 10. These guys are coming together at the right time. Kemba Walker is a little hurt, kind of an issue right now because they don't know when he's going to come back. He's listed, I think, week to week. But right now, they don't need him. How about that? The Boston Celtics might be better than Toronto Raptors. How about that?
Yeah, maybe. But ultimately, it's going to come down to how those guys play together. And then who's going to be the guy in crunch time, which is yet to be seen. Because they've taken turns in certain games this year. And then there's been games where like Jaylen Brown's gone off and he's been the guy in crunch time. But in the playoffs, I think you have to have an order as to who's going to get the ball. I think Toronto's shown that they've gone to Pascal majority of the time come crunch time. And then when he doesn't have it going, then Lowry's the guy. But you have to have that type of order, and it's going to be interesting to see which guy they go to when games get close down the stretch as Boston's trying to catch up with Toronto after Tatum's had this insane run where he's just like, he's looked more of a very decisive player, and his ball handling's got a lot better too. He's dribbling lower now, and he's getting to his spots quicker. And the one thing that Boston does that I haven't really seen any other teams do this nearly as well is when they run a pick and roll, the guy who's setting the pick, most of the time it's going to be Tice or Grant Williams. They don't roll to actually get the ball. What they do is they pick, the player, say Tatum's running the pick and roll, they pick his player. And then instead of like going for the pick and pop or the pick and roll, they then screen their man, the guy who's guarding them, the big man, in order for the person who has the ball to get to the basket. And that's how Tatum's getting a lot of these points in the paint too. Like, if you look at the game from that perspective, like, just watch Boston next game, you'll see how many of those plays that they run. I mean, a lot of teams run, the Spain pick and roll where there's another player involved with the play who picks the big man who's coming up to guard the ball. But they're just doing it in a two-man game. And it's just really interesting to see that, Brad Stevens has introduced this type of play more consistently than other teams, where the ball handler is getting like wide open, easy layups, especially in that Lakers game where Dwight Howard got picked off by the big man so many times on the pick and roll. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I saw that too, and it was kind of like it was mostly Daniel Tice. He was kind of sealing the lane, and it wasn't allowing Howard to come in to attempt to block Tatum getting to the rim. And I think he did that against the Clippers as well, where they were able to seal off Harrell. And he's basically not trying to get the ball, he's just really trying to create space so that the help defender can't come across and put up a shot contest.
It's like a 3-for-1 pick, right? It's actually genius.
It is very smart. I think teams will catch on. I don't know what you can exactly do, but I think the cool thing with Tatum is he's really more confident getting to the rim. His finishing isn't at an elite level, but it's very good right now, but he's getting to the rim at ease almost. And I think now he's taking advantage of his size, because I think at the Clippers game before the All-Star game, they were talking about his size comparison, and he almost compares a little to Kawhi, maybe not in strength, but in terms of just like bulk and size. He's athletic. He's fast, he's explosive, and I think he's a mismatch for most teams to guard. And I think the fact that he's been able to shoot the ball pretty effectively lately will make him a triple threat. Boston looks dangerous, and I think when Kemba comes back, I think that's the main wrinkle they got to work out in terms of like how they're going to do their lineups, who's going to be like being the primary creator. But I think Boston's a very dangerous team, and I wouldn't be surprised if they end up in the second seed if the Raps tail off a little.
I'm going to call it now. I'm just going to predict the future. After the season's over, Boston fans are going to be calling for Kemba Walker to be traded because he's A, not going to be able to score. He's not going to be able to score against the better teams in crunch time, and he's going to be a massive liability on defense. And they're going to be calling for, you know, Marcus Smart to be in that position with Daniel Tyson on the court instead of, you know, Kemba being out there. I think he's going to be a liability come playoff time. And yeah, I think that Boston fans are not going to like him in about give it about 3 months.
That is a wild ass take.
That is a hot take, baby.
That's holy.
And the problem is that this is not like a one that you're just saying for the sake of saying. I think you really believe this.
I do. I mean, you look at the. I know it's just an all-star game, obviously. But teams play that type of defense in the playoffs where you have to really man up. And there's going to be a lot of switching, obviously. And the way you stop Kemba Walker is you keep a long, lanky defensive player on him. And I don't think he's going to be as effective come playoff time. And I think a player like Marcus Smart might actually be more valuable come playoff time than he will.
I think Kemba Walker might not be the guy that you go to in the crunch time. I think Jason Tatum's slowly taking over that role.
Well, he still thinks he is, though. That's the problem.
He's a third-year player. Yeah, but I think he'll be established as the season goes on. I think Kemba's great. I think he'll offer you good pace. He's better, like he's a good distributor of the ball. I think he's a bit of a defensive liability for sure, but I think he'll still be able to get you a solid 25-6 in the playoffs, and those players aren't easy to find. I would definitely want him on my team. I think maybe down the stretch they might be asking for Smart, Tatum, Hayward, Brown, and Daniel Tice to be on the lineup. Down the stretch, but I think that remains to be seen.
Small, skinny guards don't have good histories in the playoffs. You gotta have a bit of meat. You gotta pack a bit of meat in that ass, or else, you know, you're just gonna be, you know, put through the basket by these bigger guards and bigger forwards when you have to switch. Guys like Lowry and Chris Paul play better in the playoff. Well, I guess Lowry is on and off, obviously, but at least he's not a liability on defense.
Lowry's been off until last year, okay? Let's slow down.
He's always consistent on defense, so he's a guy you can still play come crunch time, even if he is sucking on offense, whereas if Kemba's not able to score, he's a massive liability on defense.
I mean, I think you're overjudging Kemba way too early, since we haven't really seen him in a real playoff atmosphere.
No, but you just look at, you know, you say your opposing team like Milwaukee or Toronto, who are you going to be attacking come crunch time? You're just going to put Pascal Siakam or Giannis in a pick and roll with a point guard every single play and just say, all right, Kemba, let's see what you can do. Whereas if you have Marcus Smart in that position, it's a whole different ballgame because you don't want that switch.
Yeah, but then Marcus Smart doesn't offer you the same offensive threat that Kemba does either. Even if you have him just standing there as like a shooter, Marcus Smart's not nearly as the same kind of shooter as Kemba is.
No, for sure. He's not as great of a creator, obviously, either. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
In the playoffs and crunch time, defense matters more. So I'm making a hot take. You know, it's not really something that a lot of people are thinking about right now, but... I think ultimately it's going to be a problem for them once they play the elite teams, at least.
That's a toasty take. I like it. A TT, my friend. A TT.
Yes.
All right, let's move out west. Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. I don't know if you guys have been watching this, but the Utah Jazz are a little shaky these days, man. It's rough watching them. They've lost 3 in a row. They're 4-6 in their last 10. Their defense is just looking weak. Rudy Gobert looks disinterested. Donovan Mitchell looks like a hog again. Mike Conley still doesn't fit on this team. Can someone explain to me how Jordan Clarkson isn't carrying this team anymore? Because I can't understand it. Why do these guys just don't look like they care as much anymore?
They've gone through some really weird stretches throughout the regular season. I mean, starting off the year, I think they had a massive losing streak. They lost 4 to 5 games in a stretch, then they won a bunch of games, then they lost a few, then they won a massive win streak in January. And then they lost, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight games up until February. And then they won 4 more games after that, and now they're on a 3-game losing streak. So they just keep going through these stretches where, like, they win 3, then they lose 4, then they win 4, then they lose 3. It's been interesting. So and they've lost, you know, the last 2 against Houston and Phoenix, both winnable games. The Jazz just don't match up well with the Rockets at all, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, yesterday's game, Ricky Rubio gave him the business. He had, like, 23 and 15 and 7 steals.
Killed him.
Yeah, he just destroyed. Mike Conley had like 8 points and an assist. So the Jazz are definitely still figuring things out, which is not a good sign that, you know, this late in the regular season. I really thought Conley would fit at this point, and, you know, so far obviously he isn't. They still have some time to figure things out, obviously. But they have a pretty easy schedule coming up for the most part. They have a lot of games against San Antonio, you know, Minnesota, Atlanta. So I think they're still going to be the running for like the 3-4 seed. They still have a chance to get home court advantage, obviously, but they really have to pick it up against these playoff teams, because come playoff time, you're not going to be playing these teams like, you know, these teams like Detroit and New York Knicks that are coming up.
They could equally fall back to like 6 or 7 at this rate too, though. They're only a game and a half on Dallas, who's in 7th right now.
Yeah, based on their schedule, it's not looking likely though.
Yeah, look at this Jazz team, and they have been inconsistent, and their schedule actually has a few tough games, but like it's usually like tough game, 2 or 3 easy games, tough game, 2 or 3 easy games. And I think where I'll look at the Jazz is how competitive they are in those games against the Celtics. They play twice in the next week or so. They play the Raptors, and they also end up playing like the Lakers in a back-to-back in roughly a month. So I want to see how competitive they are. I think they're going to be a team that will probably not be the strongest team going into the playoffs, but I still think that when push comes to shove in the playoffs, they could be a dangerous team. But they're almost kind of like the Indiana Pacers of the West. Like, they have talent, they have good players, they have an identity. It's just the problem that the Jazz have had, I guess, the last couple of years is can they consistently score? And I think that's pretty much been their problem so far.
Well, I mean, the last couple of games, their problem has been on defense, because they just keep bringing Rudy Gobert out, especially in the game against Houston. Like, he looked pretty disinterested because he wasn't getting the ball in rolls, because Houston always fronts after they switch, and he just hasn't been as good lately. But ultimately, I still think they're going to get home court advantage come playoff time, but how far they go is very matchup-specific, because they do struggle against teams that, you know, have a mobile big that can bring Rudy out of the paint. And as you said, because they struggle so much to score, if their defense is inconsistent at the same time, then they're going to be a somewhat easy out, you know, in comparison to a team like, you know, Denver, teams that are competitive with to get home court advantage. I think right now you have to put them a little bit below those types of teams.
You know how there's that saying that you always got to feed the big man to keep him happy? You know, you got to find them on rolls. You got to find them if they're running the floor on a break. Like, you got to feed the big.
I think everyone feels that way playing basketball. If you're not included, you're not going to play as hard in defense.
That's fine. But is there anyone who complains more about that kind of stuff than Rudy Gobert in the league? Like, at the beginning of the year, he was very vocal about it, how he didn't like the way the system was being run.
Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, fair. You're right. But aside from Hassan Whiteside, you know what I mean, though? He has this image of just being like really well put together, that he's like a defensive monster. He's obviously one of the best defensive players in the league, but he's really pouty at the same time. And why? Because Donovan Mitchell's not finding you? Because Donovan Mitchell's hot and he's going to keep shooting? I don't know, man. Like, something about it really rubs me wrong.
I mean, Gobert has improved a lot in terms of his overall offense and being able to finish at the basket in different ways versus just dunking now. But at the same time, if you're putting a player like Covington or Tucker on him, and he gets the ball 7 to 9 feet away from the basket on a post-up, you're not scared he's going to score on you. You're more so scared that he gets the ball on the move, and then he's hitting like an easy layup or a dunk. So that part of his game still needs to be improved for the Jazz really to take another step and become an elite type of team. He really has to punish these switches, and if he's not getting the ball, then he needs to get every single offensive rebound off the rim. Like, he needs to be averaging 15-plus rebounds a game against any type of team that switches, you know, at all, really. And they switch, like, a 6'9 or less player on him. And he's, in some games he's done that, but in a lot of games he hasn't. And, you know, if he's not doing that, and the Jazz shoot as poorly as they do, and they're not getting extra opportunities, they're just not going to win, obviously.
He needs to watch some Tyson Chandler tape. That's what I've established about him.
Yeah.
Go up there and do your job, my man.
And I think that the Jazz now need to just make a decision with Conley. I don't think they can play him 30-plus minutes a game in a lot of these games. They just have to say, all right, today you don't have it, so we need to go to more Royce O'Neal and then, you know, get the ball to Joe Ingles more. Because when that was happening before Conley came back, the Jazz were winning a lot of games, obviously, against, you know, bad teams, mind you, but they look better on offense, especially. So I think in games where he's struggling, I think they just have to be like, you know, yesterday where he only played 20 minutes a game. Where, you know, you just have to say, you know, you're not playing well. I know we trust you and everything, but we need to go to somebody else because we have to win these games. We can't wait on you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if the offense is fluid, then it's fluid. Right? Like, that's all it is. Just got to roll with it. Oh, well. All right. I want to go back to this since we talked about it last week. Raj, you pointed out that you're going to be paying really close attention to, like, the 8th seed in the West. And you might have been right about this Memphis team, man. They're looking really shaky out there. They lost their last 3. They're 5-5 in their last 10. I mean, they've got one of the hardest schedules going forward. And it's really showing with these young guys that they might be collapsing a little bit.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think the Grizzlies are going through a bit of a stretch where they might look at this at the end of the regular season and be like, hey, if we could have won 2 or 3 games here, we would have been able to lock up a playoff spot. Just because they got absolutely destroyed by the Clippers. The score wasn't even reflective of how badly they played. But their upcoming games doesn't look too kind to them. They obviously play the Rockets, the Lakers, they play the Mavericks, but they also have some easier games in there like the Kings and the Hawks. But I think the problem with the Grizzlies is they don't really have that veteran leadership, someone who you can consistently rely on giving you 15 points a game. Obviously, they have Jaren Jackson also being hurt. Doesn't help. It just seems like they're now facing teams that are trying a little harder on defense now that we're getting closer to the playoffs. Teams are a little more organized. Teams are scouting for them a little better, and there's less fast break opportunities. There's less catching teams off of back-to-backs. And I think teams are now looking at the Grizzlies and being like, hey, this isn't an easy matchup. Like, they're expecting a good game, and the Grizzlies aren't able to surprise them. I won't be surprised if they end up going a bit below 500. And if they can reach 40 wins, I think they may be able to sneak into the playoffs. Other than that, I don't see them making the playoffs. I think the magic number to get to is going to be 39, and they're 11 wins away from that.
Yeah, you guys buried the lead. I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. being out is obviously massive for them. He is their second best player, obviously, and now they've lost Brandon Clark, too, after yesterday he hurt his ankle. So their depth, especially after that trade, not, you know, getting Winslow back right away, they lost Crowder, who is an NBA rotation player and a guy you can, you know, sort of count on to give you 20 to 24 minutes a game.
Put some respect Thank you. On that name.
He's an NBA caliber player. That doesn't mean he's good. But you're losing a body there, and now you're having to play, you know, Josh Jackson, who, you know, he actually played pretty well the last couple of weeks, but he's not a guy you're going to rely on night to night to give you, you know, good defense and be where he needs to be on the floor. So Memphis obviously has one of, if not the hardest strength of schedule left. But ultimately, if Memphis or New Orleans makes the playoffs, I'm good either way. As long as John Morant or Zion Williamson is the 8th seed and we get to see some, you know, some moments from them, get them some experience versus the Lakers, even if it is a 4-game series. It's better than, I think, a team like, you know, San Antonio or Portland being in the playoffs, where we've seen that story before. We need some new blood in the playoffs, so as long as one of those teams gets in, I'm cool.
Who do you think is the oldest player on the Grizzlies?
I feel like it's going to be somebody like Kyle Anderson or Gorgui Jang.
It is Gorgui Jang.
Yeah, there you go.
JV?
It's Jang. Jang is 30 years old. JV is 27. What the hell? How is this team so young? It makes no sense.
I mean, it's great for them to be this far in their development, though. Being a team that can possibly make the playoffs this year is a great sign for them. Because nobody expected them to win over, I think their over-under was like 27.5 games.
Yeah, they hit it before the All-Star break. Like, that's how good they've been.
Yeah, and they've made some really good trades in the last year now, and they have a coach that has inspired confidence, and, you know, they actually play with a style. Like, they're actually pretty fun to watch. Their offense, they move the ball a lot, and defensively, you know, when JB is not on the court, they're actually pretty quick.
Wow, the shade.
JB's played well this year. He's gotten better on defense, but when you see, like, Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson together, like, that's the future right there. I mean, those guys in the front line, they just have to figure out their swingman rotation. I'm still not a fan of fat Darren Williams at shooting guard either, but I think ultimately, like, this team is built pretty well, and they just need it. They're a couple pieces away.
Fat Darren Williams with a perm.
So how many wins does it take to get the 8 seed? Because right now Memphis has 28. They have, I believe, 25 games remaining. I think Portland's right behind them with 26
Portland's
or 25
out.
Wins.
They're done. Calling it now.
I wouldn't say that.
They barely beat Detroit without Dame.
How
Dame's going to be out at least
does it take?
Week. They're done.
Yeah, if Dame is going to be out that much longer, then I don't see Portland making it, which is a shame, man. He's been absolutely killer this whole year. But, I mean, it takes a lot to make the playoffs in the West now.
Yeah, but how many wins?
I'm going to say 40 or 41. And I think ultimately New Orleans is going to be the team that ultimately gets in.
Yeah, somewhere around that 500 mark.
41?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think 39 wins will get you into the playoffs. Because right now the Pelicans have 25. They would have to go 14-11 in the remaining games, and they would get that 39. But I look at the Trailblazers, and I think one thing that is a bit of a blessing in disguise is obviously they struggled to beat Detroit, but they are missing Bradley Beal for a few games.
Lillard?
That I think they possibly, Damian Lillard. They're missing him for a few games that they could possibly win. Obviously not the Celtics, but against the Pacers, the Hawks, and the Magic. Like, I think those are games that they can still be competitive in with their roster.
I think ultimately we're going to know who gets in that final 8 spot by mid-March. Because looking at New Orleans' schedule, they have a lot of tough games coming up. But after that, it's a cakewalk for them. So if they're able to make it out of this next 8 games with a decent record, like a 4-5 type of record, because they have road games, or they have a long road stretch coming up, or it's at Minnesota, probably going to be a win. At Sacramento, tough game. Utah, and then the Clippers. And then after that, it's mostly a cakewalk for them going forward.
Who do you actually want to see, Raj? I know, Josh, you said you wanted to see either the Pelicans or the Grizzlies. Raj, who do you want? Because you're really pushing for the Blazers right now, but is that who you really want to see?
I think the Blazers and New Orleans are the teams I want to see, just because I think they could give the Lakers one or two challenging games. I don't think they would be able to put up a real threat, but I think they could take one or two wins from the Lakers, close games. I think Portland would probably be the team I want to see, just because they have that experience, and especially with Nurkic, they would be able to match up in terms of the Lakers being a very big team. With Nurkic being there, and just getting him back would be huge. But we'll see. I also think Dame deserves to be in the playoffs. He's carried his team. I'm surprised he doesn't have a back injury, not a groin injury, from carrying the team.
You don't want to see a Zion versus AD matchup? A former, like, I don't know, half the Pelicans roster used to be on the Lakers last year. And
yeah,
and then
revenge lineup.
Yeah, man. Josh Hart versus Lakers? Ooh.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I think they still don't have enough experience to really challenge the Lakers, but I think that could be a fun series. So it's, for me, it's, I don't, like, as much as I love the Grizzlies, I just think that they would offer zero resistance to the Lakers, and I think that would be the most boring series to watch.
Yeah.
But I really do think New Orleans and Portland could offer at least a bit of a challenge, and I think New Orleans is a bit young, so I would take the Trailblazers, and especially just watching Dame, and if Nurkic ends up being healthy, I think it could be a series where they're able to take one, maybe two games.
New Orleans has a good mix of veterans and young players, though, and they play a completely contrasting style versus the Lakers, too. Like, they're going to make the Lakers play their game some of the time. They're playing the speed game and shooting a lot of threes and getting a lot of points on the board, so ultimately, I think the Pelicans would be the best matchup against the Lakers, especially with you know, Portland bringing back their big guys late if they even come back. I mean, if they're able to get Collins and Nurkic back, that could be a very interesting series, obviously. But right now, it's not looking so good with Nurkic, you know, having a couple issues since he's tried to come back. He's had some setbacks in the last 2 weeks. And Collins, there's been no update on him. So beyond that, the Trailblazers are putting out a G League bench right now. So I have a lot more faith in the Pelicans, who actually have, you know, five good players coming off their bench and a starting five that's really starting to come together. And you have some killers on that team. You got Jrue Holiday, obviously. And then again, the revenge factor. I would love to see Lonzo Ball just give it to the Lakers in the first round. Have his dad, yeah, you know, partying all around LA, talking shit to Magic Johnson. That'd be great.
How funny would it be if somehow they ended up like pushing to it to a game seven?
That'd be amazing.
That would be great. Honestly, I can see the argument being made. I just give too much credit to Dame for the entirety of the season to not include them. And I really do think Portland will be able to get to that 39 win total. So if you made me choose who's going to get that 8 seed, I'm going to say Portland over New Orleans.
Well, the good thing is we get to see two game previews in the next week now, with the Pelicans playing the Lakers tonight, as well as two games from now. So it's going to be very interesting.
Woo! Nikola Melli!
That guy's a player, by the way.
Yeah, 29-year-old rookie. He better be a player.
He's like the new Nikola Mirotic.
He's like Garbajosa from the Raptors, man. How about that for a throwback?
He's a great shooter.
Exactly. All right, anything else, guys, or are we good here? Everybody's happy. Hopefully we get to see some good matchups tonight. We're recording on Tuesday afternoon, so Bucks at Raptors and then Pelicans at Lakers. Should be a good night on TNT. I can't wait to listen to Greg Anthony and Chris Webber.
Oh, God. Anthony's cool. Yeah. Webber, oof.
Yeah, I don't know if Webber does the Tuesday games, but it'll at least be Greg Anthony and probably like McHale or something.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Just keep Reggie Miller and Chris Webber out of my life. I'm good.
Low-key, Tuesday nights on TNT better than Thursday nights.
In terms of broadcasting. Only they listen to us.
Players only, baby.
God, that was awful.
All right. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can hit us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Podcast. And until next time, peace.